I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the more delightful books of this fall season is the eagerly anticipated Stories About Storytellers from Douglas Gibson. In this country, he's described as a living legend and a publishing icon for over 40 years. He has edited and published thousands of Canada's best books. He joined Macmillan of Canada in 1974 as editorial director, and then became its publisher in 1979. In 1986, he joined McClelland and Stewart as editor and the publisher of books under his own imprint, Douglas Gibson Books. In 1988, he became the publisher at McClelland and Stewart. In 2004, he went back to concentrate on his imprint, and though he retired in 2008, at the age of 65, he publishes under his imprint at M&S still. This book has some incredibly fascinating stories, as well provides a wonderful insight into the book trade. Stories About the Storytellers, publishing Alice Munro, Robertson Davies, Alistair MacLeod, Pierre Trudeau, and others, is published by ECW Press. And this fall, he's embarking on a tour across the country to promote this book and share some of the countless stories from his years of publishing. Mr. Gibson will be in Vancouver in October. Tuesday, the 18th of October, 2011, he'll be headlining an event at the Vancouver International Writers Festival. The next night, he'll be at Bullen Books in Victoria. Check out the website douglasgibsonbooks.com for details on the book and this tour that takes him across the country. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Toronto this day, Douglas Gibson. Good morning, Mr. Gibson.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted.
This is, as I told you off tape, such a difficult book to put down. Did you have fun writing it?
Yeah. You may notice the most important words in the book are right at the end. At the end of the last chapter, we jump into the acknowledgements and the afterword. And the first words there are, as you can see, it's been a lot of fun.
Right.
So this is the opposite of, people who write embittered memoirs where they weren't treated too well and had a bad time and are getting even. None of that here. What I am talking about is how lucky I was throughout my career to work with really fascinating people, you know, both fiction and nonfiction, the prime ministers, etc. And I had fun doing it and picked up, as you know, amazing stories along the way. So I had great fun writing this book.
Could this book have been perhaps twice its length with all the stuff that you had to cut out, maybe?
Absolutely. The toughest part was exactly that. You know, in effect, I was dealing with 40 years of being in publishing. So how do you cut that down? And the answer eventually was, okay, you restrict yourself to those authors you actually got to know really well, working with them as their editor. You know, I published literally thousands of books, but I edited maybe 100+. So you cut it down to the people you worked with as an editor. That makes it a lot easier. But, you know, after I did that, I still had 30, 40 really interesting people. And as you know, I cut it down eventually to 21.
What was it like for you when the people at ECW sent you the first copy of this book, right as it got off the press, I guess? Was that as special a moment for you as you described some of the authors in this book found it to be?
Yes, and this has been one of the delights of this whole process. You know, I have published literally thousands of books, okay?
Yeah.
This means that I've been present on hundreds of occasions where excited authors come in and for the first time, and you know, it's like seeing a new baby, they see the first copy of their book just sent, rushed in from the printers. And guess what? This experienced, grizzled old character learns from publisher that, hey, your book's in, and I and my wife rush out there, and I behave like the typical first-time author. I'm dancing around, I'm taking the cover off, I'm opening the book, I'm practically smelling it. You know, it's so exciting. So, yep, I went through all of the birth pangs and all of the excitement of being a first-time author. So it's going to be fascinating as I, as you've indicated, head out across the country doing my show, talking about my book, to be an author and go through all the author experiences. So far, it's been just terrific.
Have any of your author friends given you advice on how to handle the tour?
Oh, yes. Everyone's full of advice, but They love the fact that I'm having tough times. For example, all of my authors really enjoyed it when I said, gee, you know, writing this book isn't as easy as I thought it would be. And in fact, I gave a talk called Harder Than I Thought, A Publisher Tries to Write a Book. And one of the themes there was how all of the authors on whom I've been a tough guy saying, go on, what's the matter with you? Finish the damn book. We're finding that, hey, Gibson's pretty good at cracking the whip, but in his own case, he's having real trouble getting the book done. So they love that, and they're going to love it when I have trouble, you know, with things going wrong on the book tour, as they always do. And the advice I give, or used to give, is don't worry, you blame the publisher.
Yeah,
so I'll be blaming the publisher whenever anything goes wrong.
How have the people at ECW, the publisher, the editors there, how have they been to work with?
They've been terrific, because that would have been one of the great stories. You know, this hotshot who's edited all of these great people, when he's having his own work edited, proves to be really a troublemaker, and he has bad times with them, and they quarrel all the time. None of that. I've been really well treated, and in fact, early on, you may recall in the book, there's a line where I say, you know, the rule seems to be unvarying. The authors who take the don't touch a hair of my baby's head, don't change a comma approach tend to be the first-time authors, the inexperienced ones, whereas the more experienced and thoughtful ones are glad to have somebody, an editor, sometimes me, sometimes another person, really seriously pulling the book apart and looking at it word by word, phrase by phrase, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, and so on. And so what Jen Nock, who was the editor, did was outline that sentence and say, sent this along to me saying, I hope I don't have to remind you of this at any point.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, she didn't, and we got on really well, and I thought she did a terrific job in editing the book, and I've been really impressed by everything about it. It's as you know, a really good-looking book.
Yeah, the illustrations as well are just great to look at.
Aren't they? And that was important right from the start. I didn't want this to be seen as a, you know, clear your throat and get serious, canlit book about all of these great authors. I wanted it to be seen right away as fun. And so that's why the caricatures of all of these authors, which open the chapters, you know, here's W. Mitchell, here's Robertson Davies, here's Alice Munro, here's Alistair MacLeod. All of them I wanted to be informal. And that was why we brought in Tony Jenkins, who's the great cartoonist for the Toronto Globe and Mail. And as you know, he's done a terrific job so that each chapter opens with a Jenkins caricature, and they're on the cover of the book, too. So right from the start, you know, oh, this isn't going to be a serious, reverent treatment. This is going to be fun.
Let's start at the beginning. You were born in Scotland. And
right.
You came to Canada when? How old were you?
I was 67. It was centennial year, so I guess I was 23 at the time. And I, you know, a couple of degrees, but I, you know, I this was all new and exciting, and I was going to get a job in something like newspaper work or maybe even publishing. And I got very lucky, and early in 68, I got a job as a trainee editor.
You spent your first week here in Vancouver, did you?
Yeah. I describe myself as a Scottish immigrant with a very poor sense of direction. so I came in off the Seattle ferry at Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And the first night I went to to Vancouver and spent my first week there and then worked my way by bus eastward across the country. And I think people have told me that that was significant because instead of, like most immigrants, now just stepping off a plane,
mm-hmm.
I really got to know Vancouver and I really got to know the West Coast and then got to know the Rockies and the Prairies and. So I came into this as somebody aware of just what a huge and varied country this was. And I made a very smart decision right away when I got into publishing. I said, if you're going to be any good as a Canadian publisher, you have to get to know the country. And I think you'll find that there are stories from every province, every territory, and I would back my knowledge of the country against pretty much anyone. In fact, Alan Twigg of BC Book World, my God, Doug, you know the country better than anyone.
Yeah. The chapter on Barry Broadfoot talks very lovingly of this city. I've never lived anywhere else than Vancouver. And in reading it, I felt like you'd lived here too, and you knew it just as well as anybody.
Well, you know, I worked out once, I was at a conference to celebrate BC writing that Alan Twigg put on at SFU a couple of years ago. And I worked out that I'd spent almost a year of my life, you know, a couple of weeks here, a week there, etc., in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt in my mind that, yeah, Vancouver is a huge, important center. And I'm proud that I was the chairman of the advisory board that helped to set up the master's program in publishing studies at SFU, which is, you know, the only one in the country.
Right.
Master's program where you learn about publishing.
This might be a silly question, but, you know, this won't be the last one, I'm sure I'll ask. Could you have published this book, say, at your own imprint at M&S?
No. I could have, of course, but it would have been a really stupid thing to do. There's a great established sensible tradition in publishing that if you have worked in publishing and you write a book, it should not be published by any publisher with whom you have had anything to do. So, for example, it would have been crazy for me to publish this book with McClelland and Stewart, or indeed with any of the Random House groups with which they're associated. So that was step one. Yeah, I had to approach someone who was absolutely objective. And the reason for that, you see, is that when you publish a book, there are all kinds of subjective decisions that you make. You know, how many books are you going to print? How much are you going to spend on marketing it? And if you're doing that for your own book, the objectivity goes out the window, and you can't be sure that you're doing this fairly and properly. So answer to that is you go and have it published by someone who is objective. And I've been delighted by everything that ECW Press has done.
Now, you're still active with your own imprint. You've got how many books do you have coming out this season?
Well, last year I brought out the latest Alice Munro, and
right.
I brought out the two Terry Follis funny novels, including The Best Laid Plans, which, you know, won the Canada Reads competition.
Right.
But this fall, the big book I have coming out as publisher is called Trudeau Transformed. And Max and Monique Nemney in 2006 brought out Volume 1 of their intellectual biography of Pierre Trudeau. And this is Volume 2, which takes him from 1944, when he leaves the University of Montreal, and goes into the wider world. So it's 1944 up to 1965 when he enters Parliament. And he left Montreal as a young fascist, a guy who really thought de Gaulle was wrong and Pétain, who collaborated with the Nazis, was on the right side, etc., etc., etc. And from 1944 onwards, you see him being transformed into the liberal, small L and capital L liberal, politician that we all know. So Trudeau Transformed is, I think, absolutely the right title for that. And you can see, I think it's a terrific book.
Yeah. I'm reading the first one.
They were friends of Trudeau's, mm-hmm. but they got in to see all of his documents, and what they found there was ugly stuff. And as good scholars, they said, wow, we got to reveal this. And I, as a friend of Trudeau's, but as a publisher, said, yep, you know, we've got a responsibility to reveal all this. And now it's great to be able to say, okay, Trudeau's transformed. He came all the way from there to the guy we remember.
So you published as well the Clarkson McCall books
yep.
on Trudeau. You published Trudeau's memoirs. And then this new book on Trudeau. It seems like every year there's another contribution to the Trudeau Library. What is it, as a book publisher, I mean, these books obviously sell, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a very special place in many Canadians' hearts for Pierre Trudeau. You know, he represents something different in terms of our politicians, and that shows up when we publish books about Trudeau. But as you know, I was fortunate to work also with Brian Mulroney on his memoirs and Paul Martin on his memoirs. And I make the joke that it's kind of fun. These prime ministers get used to retiring into private life, and then, they got to work with Doug Gibson on their memoirs. It's a kind of rite of passage.
I want to ask about Trudeau and ask about Mulroney. Would you like to edit Stephen Harper?
It'd be interesting. That's a very good question. I've published a book about Stephen Harper.
Yeah.
And it came out in 2006, and I could see where he was going. So we called it, this was crazy back in those days, we called it Stephen Harper and the Future of Canada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people say, ha, 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 what a crazy subtitle. Well, there you go. I'd be interested in working with him if he really wanted to tell the story. You know, he's been such a guarded politician that I can't say with any confidence that, yes, of course, he will give us an interesting and informative book. You don't think of him that way. But by the time you decide to do your memoirs, most politicians recognize this is time to come clean and get it all on the record.
Isn't he working on a hockey book?
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah. Back to Trudeau. How did his memoir, how did that end up with you at McClelland and Stewart?
Well, we were interested in it, and we put out the word that we were interested in it, and we won the bidding. And then, as you know, this in my portrait of Trudeau, I give the inside story about how when the manuscript of his memoirs finally came in, and it carried with it our hopes, for financial hopes for the year, because of course we spent a heck of a lot of money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a sleepless night because it was awful. It was no good at all. And Avi Bennett, the chairman, and I decided this was an emergency, and we had to go to Trudeau, tell him that it all had to be rewritten. Now, Avi knew him, and I didn't, and, you know, to meet Pierre Trudeau, I'd have preferred an easier, hi, how are things going, conversation.
Yeah.
But we went to meet him in his office, and he was very polite, and nice to see you again. And then he said, but what brings you here? And Avi turned the meeting over to me. And I basically said, here's what's wrong with the manuscript. It has to be totally redone. Made chronological rather than theme after theme after theme. And did Trudeau shrug and say, okay, sure, whatever makes sense to you? No. What I got was him leaning forward with that keen-eyed look, yeah, and a frown, and then objection after objection after objection. But if we did this, well, what would happen to that? And what about that? And surely we'd have to, and that, and that, and that. And I had an answer to all of them, and he kept at me, and at me, and at me, and no question of, oh, sure, that makes sense, Doug. Just, but what about this? But what about that? And eventually, after, I don't know, 20 minutes, he leant back and relaxed and says, okay, what you're saying makes sense. We'll do it your way. And what I learned there is that prime ministers get an awful lot of people coming to them with crazy ideas. And the crazy ideas may sound brilliant or they may sound crazy, but the only way you can work out the difference is if you question them very closely to make sure they've thought this through. So Trudeau, who didn't know me, was questioning me really closely to make sure this fellow Gibson has thought this through and knows what he's doing. And when I passed that test, fine, we'll do it your way. And after that, we never had any problems, and I enjoyed working with him. And as you know, we became friends, and I would visit him in his Montreal office, where he nearly killed me, as you know the story.
Yeah, yeah. People should pick up the book for that story, yeah. Let's move on to Brian Mulroney. In the acknowledgments of his book, and I had to look it up because I remember reading it, but I just want to get the quote right. He He said that he was going to deal with his post-prime ministerial years in another book in another time. Are we there yet?
I'm not sure. The answer to that would have to come from him. And I haven't talked to him for some months now, so I can't answer that. But it's interesting that the book, as you know, ends with him and Mila leaving the Governor General's house after he's resigned as Prime Minister. So all of the Karl Heinz Schreiber stuff comes later and just isn't dealt with at all there. And, you know, the book itself is 1,100 pages, so my argument was it has to end somewhere when you leave the PMO. It's the obvious end point. And then the following book, that'll be up to him, whether he wants to do it.
You don't have an option on it or anything like that?
Okay, that's interesting. I haven't pursued it, but I assume, as with every book we have. So, yeah, I've had the pleasure of sending copies of the book to all of the people portrayed. You know, it's just hot off the press. So I've sent a copy to Trudeau's family, for instance, to Brian Mulroney, etc., etc. And I haven't heard back from him yet. And it'll be interesting to hear what his reaction is.
About his book, you mentioned it's 1,100 pages. I remember some of the reviews when it came out said that it was too long, that it needed to be edited. As the editor, as the publisher, when reviews say things like that, do you take that personally?
I take it seriously, but not personally, and I am happy to get into a debate about it, because you remember that early on, because he wrote it chronologically, and he wrote it with his own hand, mm-hmm. and that's really significant. You know, this is the real Brian Mulroney. And we met in his office in Montreal, and he said, look, I'm writing an awful lot about the early days in Baie-Comeau. Do you think people are going to be interested in that, or should I cut through all that and make it much shorter? I said, no, absolutely not, because what you're writing there is fascinating. People simply have no idea that, for example, you grew up in a house so poor that you and your brother had to share space in the basement around the heater to clear a room upstairs for a boarder who brought in money to the household. You know, people had no idea of just how tough things were. And I would argue, as I said to him, and besides, the Baie-Comeau years show us where, in every sense, where you come from. And you see my subtitle to his chapter is Boy from Baie-Comeau, because I think that sense of being a kid from 14 hours away from the nearest big town, Quebec City, you know, this guy was always the outsider. He was always desperately worried about money, and I think you can start seeing a pattern here, the boy from Baie-Comeau. So I said then, no, you keep, give us the details about the early years, and if that sets the pace for a long book, okay, we're going to have a long book. And I think the merit of the book is that, you know, he was in office year after year after year, and what we get chapter by chapter is the sense of sitting behind the Prime Minister's desk as problem after problem comes flying across it. And said, oh boy, we've got the South African problem, we've got fighting with Margaret Thatcher over that, oh, the Berlin Wall, etc., etc. So I would argue, and I'm arguing, that no, it's a long book because it deals with a long public career in detail. And if you want to blame anyone for it being too long, I'm the guy to blame.
The book did well, though, right? It sold well?
It sold well until, in my phrase, we was Schreibered.
Oh, okay.
You know, sudden, yeah. The book's at the top of the bestseller list, getting mm-hmm. great reviews, and then the Schreiber story hits the Globe and Mail and the CBC, and it's revealed for the first time that the Schreiber had paid $300,000 to Mulroney, and that was all new news, and it wasn't good news for Mulroney or the book, and suddenly we could see the sills dropping off. We were Schreibert.
Yeah. Another prime minister, you didn't publish him, but you, I guess you sort of played him on the cover of Jeffrey Simpson's book, The Friendly Dictatorship, Jean Chrétien.
Yeah, the Jeffrey Simpson's The Friendly Dictatorship was warning us all that in Canada, uniquely in all the, you know, the old Commonwealth democracies with a parliamentary system, we were developing a really centralized prime minister's office with more power to our, given to our, or assumed by our prime ministers than any of the other countries. And this was during Jean Chrétien's time. So, hence the title, The Friendly Dictatorship, and the warning about how centralized this was all becoming. So when you're a publisher, the way you play a book in terms of its the cover is very important. And if we'd done just, you know, no image and just The Friendly Dictatorship, a worrying by Jeffrey Simpson, people would have said, not interesting. But what we did do was we dressed someone up in a dictator's uniform, like Latin American dictator, you know, with the white uniform, the rows of medals and so on, and the fancy colored hat, smiling and waving at that the crowd. And the person who was dressed up in that outfit was me, because some of my scaredy cat fellow McClellan and Stewart employees said, oh my God, it'd be so expensive, we'd have to hire someone to, you know, to fill the uniform, and then we superimposed Chrétien's smiling face. I said, no problem, I can do it. So I went and dressed in the uniform, was photographed smiling, and then we superimposed Jean Chrétien's face. And as you know, later, when I was at an Ottawa launch for Eddie Goldenberg's book and Jean Chrétien was around, he came up to me and said, I wouldn't do the full Chrétien, but there's some really bad books published, and, you know, like that Jeffrey Simpson, Friendly Dictatorship. Now, you wouldn't have anything to do with that, would you? And I confessed that, yeah, it was my book, but I didn't get around to telling him that I was the smiling guy on the cover waving with his face on it.
The future of books is something that is often talked about in the press and the sort on this program. Are you hopeful about the years from now we'll still be publishing in this country?
Yes. And I have two reasons for that. One is, as the title of my book, Stories About Storytellers, indicates, the great strength of books is that they tell stories. And I believe there's a basic human hunger for stories in any format, but books are a great way of getting the stories across. Second reason is nobody really knows where the technology is going, the electronic technology. But if you were to look at a country that was likely to benefit from it, you'd look for a country that was widespread and where a huge part of the publisher's income was spent in transporting books thousands of miles from coast to coast and then transporting them back when they're returned, etc., etc. In other words, Canada is precisely the sort of country that stands to benefit from transporting its books electronically rather than in trucks. I got a controversial response when I spoke to a group of publishers once and said, you know, that we've got the Teamsters distribution system. It's absolutely crazy. We're trucking truckloads of heavy printed books right across the country to and fro. And it's great for the Teamsters, but it just doesn't make environmental or economic sense. So when the book world gets the electronic book distribution system right, Canadians and Canadian publishers stand to benefit from it more than any other. Perhaps the Soviet Union would be another comparison, but stands to benefit from it because of the sort of country we have.
And do you have an e-reader yourself?
Yes, I do.
You do? Yeah, and do you enjoy that?
I'm not. It was bought for me by my wife, who said, you got to get, come on, get with the program. So I haven't used it as widely or as smartly as I plan to. But yeah, there's no doubt it's coming. It's here, but it's going to be used by people who are reluctant to use it now. And you know, this doesn't mean the death of the printed book. It's just an alternative way of delivering the printed book. And it's interesting. I've indicated that I've been involved in educating people for publishing. And when young folks come to me and say, "Well, you know, will there be a job for me?" I say, nobody can honestly say what the shape of the new publishing industry will be, but there will always be a role for smart people, editors, who can be gatekeepers, who can say, "Listen, we've looked at this, and the really good book is this one, and we're putting our name and our reputation behind it. And then we've helped to shape it and improve it," and so on. There will always be a role for those gatekeepers and those people who can edit and improve things. So we don't know exactly what the overall business is going to be, but there will be a place for people who are trained to do that.
Doug, this has been such a pleasure to talk to you. This half an hour has just whizzed by. I've really enjoyed this book, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Writers' Festival next month.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning both the Vancouver Writers' Festival and the event in Victoria at Boland's the next day. It's going to be fun.
Indeed. The events, again, Tuesday the 18th of October at the Vancouver International Writers' Festival, Wednesday the 19th at Boland Books in Victoria. There are events across the country. You can see the list at douglasgibsonbooks.com. The book is called Stories About Storytellers, publishing Alice Munro, Robertson Davies, Alistair MacLeod, Pierre Trudeau, and others. It's published by ECW Press. Its author, Douglas Gibson, on the line from Toronto in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.